This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 25, Carambol Googlies. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we have a carambol bowler who also can bowl carambol googlies, and he's wondering how fast he should bowl. And we also talk about the art of being able to judge a 1, a 2, and a 3 run. Plus, we have some feedback from Andrew about contributing to the team, even if you're not the best player. Keep listening for all that and more on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to coaching and playing better cricket, no matter who you are in the world and no matter where you are in the world. My name is David Hinchliffe, and joining me this week is the regular team, minus one. We got no Berners this week, unfortunately. He's on his holidays. He's sunning himself at an undisclosed location. But on the line, first of all, it's Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garrus.
How are you all?
I'm ready to rock and roll, as always. The hat is on the side of my head.
Oh, splendid.
Also on the line is Sam Lavery, the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. Lavers, how are we doing?
Very well, thank you. Sun shining, another beautiful day on the south coast, ready to go.
Oh, it's marvellous, marvellous stuff. And we're going to start off with some follow-up. And if you remember, it was from Andrew, our epic question, Andrew Mann, who we dedicated almost an entire show to. And he's come back with a little bit of follow-up for us on what he's been doing. He's been in touch about doing some coaching, which is always good news. But he hasn't got a great deal of progress with that yet. But he's been playing cricket as well. And he said to me via email, he said, the big revelation was me was in the fielding. Due to short boundaries, my captain wanted me to patrol third man to third man as a boundary saver. And I did my job and saved a couple of boundaries. And that made me think, when I said I wanted to contribute, then I can make my goal more specific. I want to be a team man, to do the role the captain wants me to do without complaint. And if that means going from boundary to boundary as a patrolman, then so be it. If I can do that reliably, then I've done my job for the team. And I think that makes my marker for success much clearer, rather than just saying I want to be a good cricketer. So I think he's got quite specific there on his role, and he's fitting in to be a team man. And that's a very important position in a lot of cricket teams, which is often overlooked, isn't it? The guy who does his bit, it's not very flashy, but he does it week in, week out. And he makes that tiny little bit of difference that helps teams win games.
Certainly is. And I think we can all think of people that have been in our side, to, you know, that we've played with over the years that have fulfilled that role. And the great thing is that I can also remember games where they came to the party and won a game for us, you know, and did something that was a bit special. And I'm sure that that will happen to Andrew at some stage in the near future. But one of the things that I want to come up with, really, as the dog goes across the phone, is that well done on getting yourself back to what you used to do when you were a kid. Because certainly when I started playing, I remember playing at a cricket ground called Porchfield on the Isle of Wight when I was about 12, 13 years old, playing for the second team, and it's a massive ground. And I took huge pride on A, being out there with a group of adults that I'd watched play cricket for a number of years, but also we're doing fine leg to fine leg, and I would sprint at the end of each over from fine leg to do my role. And all I wanted to do was to make sure that the ball, that any ball that came to me, I picked it up cleanly and I threw it in. I wanted to make sure that the over rate was high. I wanted to make sure that I was backing up every throw that I possibly could. And it sounds like, Andrew, you did exactly that. And often when we grow up, we forget about the excitement and the pleasure and the confidence that we got from what seemed like the most simple of things when we were young. Well done on reconnecting with that.
If you can do one thing well, then you're doing a good job, aren't you, Lavers?
Yeah, it's great. And the other thing is that there are obviously players in the side who will need managing, and it becomes an additional role for the captain to constantly supervise people in the side who are drifting or who maybe aren't alert and maybe aren't thinking about their role. So you're taking a lot of the pressure off the captain, saying, look, I know what my job is. Yes, it might be a relatively simple one, but you don't need to worry about me. I'll be doing my job to the best of my ability. I'll be down here. I'll be alert every ball. I'll be ready to go. And if there is an opportunity to get involved, I'll be ready to do it. So you can worry about everyone else on the side, but you can be guaranteed that I'm ready to go and I'll be doing my job to the best of my ability.
Oh yeah, there's always that guy you find you see him too close or too deep after a couple of balls of getting a bit bored and he forgets where he's supposed to stand. You see that in every team, don't you?
Absolutely, and for the captains, it becomes a painstaking affair of constantly trying to, and you almost create a culture of moaning as well. If someone's there, you're always having to remind them, and that's not how you want to be as a captain. You want to be not. You want to be positive to, as much as you can. So to the best extent, if you can take that pressure off the captain and you can do your job well, then everyone's life becomes easy.
Yeah, we had a guy on do that on this Saturday, just wandering around. He found himself at square leg, and I don't know where he ended up. But by the end of the third or the fourth over, so I shouted at him, you know, you can use your spikes to make a mark if you want to remember where you stand. And he duly then scraped a mark and didn't move for the rest of the time he was building that position. So he got there in the end. He wasn't the worst we've had in my club. In my club, there was a guy. I think word got around the whole area about him. His name was Anoop. I'm not going to say any more than that. And I've seen Anoop be put at mid on, and you turn around three overs later, and he's fielding an extra cover. He hasn't moved. He hasn't swapped with anyone. He's just standing there. So that was the worst I've ever seen. Can anyone top that?
I don't think I can, mate. To be brutally honest with you.
I have been involved in charity games, and I'm sure Gareth has as well, where you suddenly realise that the guy who you thought was at long off is now sitting down tucking into lunch early because he's fancied a bit of food that's coming out. I've seen that happen before, where, and obviously a beer on the sideline usually happens as well, doesn't it, when you get the old charity game going along. But yeah, not during a competitive game, just a stroll across to the other side of the pitch while no one's looking.
Yeah, he's very stealthy about it as well. So well done to Andrew. Keep up the good work, and let us know how the coaching thing goes as well, because I know you've been looking into that, but you haven't heard back from the relevant authority. So keep us informed, Andrew. Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes no round. Three questions that we can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. So, Garrers and Lavers, you're on duty here for the yes and no. I don't know if the dog wants to chip in as well there, Garrers.
Well, she's doing a great job on the desk at the moment, so maybe so, mate.
And maybe. We'll find out what she thinks about these three questions. Here we go.
One woof for yes, two for no.
Okay, here we go. First question. Early specialisation has worked for some.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. England have wasted elite coaching resources because academies are not producing world-class spinners.
No.
No.
Third question. It's better to fail in originality than to succeed in imitation.
No.
No.
Time now for us to enter the mailbag. A couple of questions which are sent in by the readers of Pitch Vision Academy, or the listeners to this show. And the best question of the week, not only does it get answered, but it also gets a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. If you want to send in your questions or question to us, you can do so by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and we'll have more details on different ways you can get the question to us towards the end of the show. The first question is from Arjun. And Arjun says, I bat in the upper order for my team and I focus a lot on running hard between the wickets as possible. In the beginning, I focus on taking quick singles, but as the innings goes on, there are more twos and threes. The problem is that I'm having is that when I'm running in between the wickets, I tend to get stuck at either end because of not being able to judge whether to take the next run or not while the fielder's chasing the ball. How early should you make the call of taking a run? Due to this, I'm not able to communicate effectively with my partner and we're getting runouts because of late calling. How can I solve this? So calling, judging a run and calling, it's a bit of an art. Is there any way that we can help Arjun shortcut to stop him running his partners out?
Well, it depends what type of run you're taking. Is it a single? Is it a two? Is it a three? You know, if it's a single, then I think we've talked about on the show, and certainly I've written about it, that it's a really good idea to get some sort of preordained single areas that we're going to take irrespective. So, you know, I know of some teams that just hit it to mid on and mid off and run irrespective. I know of sides that as soon as the ball hits the pad, that their first intention is to run, and so on and so forth. So it almost takes the decision making out of the equation, because you've already decided that is going to happen. And that's certainly been a benefit to a number of sides that I've been fortunate enough to work with. When it comes to twos and threes, one of the best bits of advice that I've ever been given came from Duncan Fletcher, who would always say that as soon as you hit it, you've got an idea how many runs you're going to be getting, purely because of the distance that the ball goes away from the fielders, either past the fielders that they have to chase, or in another direction where the fielder on a boundary, for example, has to come in or traverse to one side to get to it. So you've got a really good idea. So that's one thing. You can almost get hit and go based on hitting the ball into space and making that initial call on that first run. We're looking for two, we're looking for three. Mm. That sets the parameters and the intention for the run, so your partner knows exactly what's going on and exactly what the intention is at the start of any journey that he makes with you. So I think that's absolutely crucial. The other thing is always to communicate on each of the runs that you make, because things do change. You may have miscalculated the length of the outfield, for example. You may have miscalculated how quickly somebody is getting to the ball. You may have thought that it was a different fielder back at deep mid on instead of the one that now is running to the ball who possesses a good arm. These things are constantly changing, and therefore every time that we are going into a turn, and even as we're passing each other, we should be communicating to our partner. So it sounds to me that your decision making is coming at the turn as opposed to throughout the journey of every run. And it's something that a lot of good sides do very well, is have constant streams of communication going throughout any run, whether it be a single, a two, or a three.
Yeah, I'm surprised how often there isn't very much communication going on between two batsmen, especially if they haven't batted together very, very often. I don't think you can over communicate, can you? You know, just purely the basics of calling. You know, saying wait if you haven't decided whether you're going to run or not is something that is, I don't see that often in adult teams, and with younger teams, I'm definitely, the ones that I coach anyway, I'm definitely trying to get them out of the habit of hitting the ball, and if they're not sure whether they're going to run or not, instead of saying wait, often they'll say no or stay, which kind of the non-striker then is more likely to relax and go, well, there's no run there, I'm just gonna lean on my bat. Whereas a wait, I think, is saying, I haven't decided yet, stay alert, stay ready, because we might have to go in a second.
Sometimes silence can be an issue as well, if you just say nothing, and it can create a little bit of, you can leave a partner a little bit puzzled, really, as to what you're going to do if there's no communication whatsoever. So, yeah, wait's a really good call, and probably an underused one that should be a tool for every batsman as they're trying to work out whether they're going to go and when they're going to go. It keeps someone informed, and it makes them aware that until it's signed off with a no, effectively, then the opportunity is still there for the taking.
Yeah, I mean, I'd much rather hear wait said too often than not often enough, because you've got your amber light. You're ready to go, aren't you, with wait, whereas with no, it's much more likely to slow you down. But when you make that decision is an interesting point, isn't it? Because it can vary so greatly, can't it? If you see the ball's going into a gap, you can call straight away. If you see the ball's going to a fielder's left hand, you might, and you know he's a decent fielder, but you also know he's right-handed, then you might have to wait a little bit longer to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's true. It's true that. But from this question, just listening to the question, it sounds to me as if the singles are actually working okay. The crucial one is coming when the ball's going into the outfield and there's potential for coming back for a two or three. Sounds like the issue. And the other thing to to consider as well is that somebody of younger years is likely not to be able to get between the wickets quite so quickly as somebody. If you're playing in a senior side at the age of 13 or 14, then there's a good chance that the seniors are going to be a little bit more athletic and explosive than yourself. So again, you have to take into consideration the athleticism or otherwise of the person that you're running with and yourself, and the differences that that might create too.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So to me, it's the twos and threes, and I think communication throughout that process, throughout each of those runs, is absolutely crucial. And I generally don't hear enough of it. And we've got a couple of lads at school now who are 15 playing with some under 18s, and obviously have got a bit of physical maturation to go. And it's been the twos and the threes rather than the singles that have been the greatest problems and greatest contributors to runouts this year.
When you're touching down to turn and you think there's still the possibility of another run on, then saying something as you get there, even if something simple like the ball's in his hand or something, that's going to help your partner work out if he's running to the danger end, whether he needs to go or not.
Yeah, it does, but it's also that stuff in between, isn't it? It's when you pass each other. Yeah. I think that's the greatest communication opportunity that we have,
yeah,
because that's the closest we're going to get to each other. So we can give people heads up at that time, and I don't see that enough. I see a lot of calling going on at either end,
right,
of the pitch, but obviously that's often calling that's done with eyes and ears in opposite directions, and also every chance that one or even both of the people aren't actually looking at what's happening in the outfield. So I think there's a really good opportunity to preempt what's going to happen during that passing phase. And certainly the mm-hmm. best partnerships I've ever had have always included that within their twos and threes.
Well, I think that probably just expanding from what Gareth said, I completely agree. I talk about three phases of communication for running, really. One of them is exactly that, what Gareth said. It's that as you're probably a quarter of the way down the pitch, that's when you're making your first bit of communication towards the next run, usually. So you've got your partner four or five steps in front of you coming towards you. You're making a bit of conversation then. You're talking into the turn, and then you're talking out of the turn. But the talking only happens if you do the process before that, which is the assessment. So obviously, as you... before you can talk, you need to have a look at the ball, have a look at the field, have a look at the situation. So it's going through the process, really, of always assessing the situation and then talking. So if we want to talk at halfway or a third of the way down the pitch, we need to assess the situation immediately before that. If we want to talk before the turn, we need to get into the habit of looking before the turn. If we want to talk out of the turn, we need to be getting in the habit of looking as we're turning. So it's just trying to make sure that we always have the same routine, so we're always gathering information at the same times, which gives us a good idea of whether or not we can make a run or not. If we're making decisions at different times on each occasion, then it's difficult to assess the run, whereas if your information is always gathered halfway down the pitch, pre-turn and post-turn, then you're always able to have a reasonably good assessment as to, I can make that because I've done this before and I know how much time it takes me to get from this specific point in my run. So pre-turn, you may know how much time you need. Post-turn, you obviously need a little bit less time. But you get to know your own speed. And as you mentioned before, need to get to understand your partner's speed as well. But trying to have those three set points all the time as much as possible. And obviously, there's room for other communication as you may spot things as they happen. So you can build around those three points there. But it's... If you can start with those three, that's pretty good. Obviously, a key part of running that we talk about is turning correctly and not turning blind. One thing, if you are looking for twos and certainly threes, is sometimes you can just turn the fastest way you go. If you've hit the ball and you know you've got at least two, then you can create a third by, instead of turning and looking at the ball, just turning whichever way is fastest for you as well. So that might be something you've picked up in your first assessment as you set off on your first run, that we've already decided it's going to be a minimum of two. But yeah, trying to have a basic structure for your running, that you've got 3 points where you're going to assess and communicate, is a pretty good starting point.
And building on that as well, a point that you've said, Gareth, which is in the past, which is always look, no matter what's happened, no matter whether it's hit you on the pad, you've got it right out of the screws, whatever happened, your first thought is always, can I set off here? Can I run here? And then you're ready for it, rather than thinking, oh, that was a lovely shot, I'm going. especially with younger players, you see a lot, don't you? I've hit it hard, I'm going.
Exactly right. We had a classic the other day where one of our younger players that were given exposure into first team cricket did exactly that. He played a fantastic on drive straight to the man on the drive at straight mid wicket and proceeded to run himself out by 14 yards.
Oh my God.
And it was exactly that. And that's where I think we can be a bit better in nets, can't we? And I know I talk about this a lot, but really simulating as much as possible in nets. Simulating not just that's a one, which generally a lot of people do, but actually simulating things like hit it and then make your first four strides when you're simulating a run. So you're actually getting the cognitive decision and also the physical response out of yourself, because that's exactly what you're going to do when you're playing out in the middle.
And funny, lovely.
I think with junior cricketers, it can work the other way around as well, can't it? I think sometimes they set off because they hit one out in the middle and they think that must be one. But also sometimes because they play in defence, they assume that it won't be a one.
Yes.
Whereas obviously, as we know, most singles are probably taken from defensive shots effectively, and it's being positive in defence and not just assuming that because you didn't play an attacking shot, you can't have runs out of it. A lot of the time if you drop the ball at your feet, especially the higher the level you go, that's the place that's furthest away from all the fielders, really. So if you can drop the ball somewhere close to you, you can set off. So being positive in your running, even if you weren't intending to hit the ball hard, is something you can do to rotate the scoreboard early and frustrate the opposition and the bowlers and the fielders.
If it's something you're mindful of, if it's something you're working with your partner or doing, then you're going to get better at it. And try using some of that advice to get yourself some more singles and some more twos and threes, and hopefully a few less run outs. Next question is from Sam. And Sam says, there's one thing that I need to work on. I'm a mystery spinner with carom balls and carom ball googlies. I'd like to build on my pace just to make it extra hard to pick. It's going well so far, but I'm trying to think ahead if I'm to play at a decent level. I'm saying this as I know that Mendes and Narine both bowl much faster than me. I don't know whether the pace will come with age, as I'm only 16. So Sam is bowling all kinds of magic balls, but he's worried about whether he's going to be able to transfer that up to a higher level. How much should he worry about that, and how much should he work on it?
Well, first of all, it's obviously anyone who's got a talent like that is really useful, and being able to do something that a lot of people just can't do is a really exciting start. So you should be very pleased and excited about what potentially you could be achieving along the line. Also, don't feel like you're in an unusual situation because of the nature of bowling that type of delivery. You invariably don't have your two fingers and subsequently your wrist behind the ball a lot of the time. So generating the same amount of speed is often something that's lacked a little bit, because bowlers are bowling with their fingers almost in front of the ball as opposed to behind it, or they're starting to flick a ball with a finger rather than having that wrist snap that you can get conventionally with an off break or either with a leg break. So don't be surprised that you find yourself in that situation. In terms of how you can generate extra speed, you might find that there are ways you can use your momentum and use your jump more. However, before I go into that, I'd definitely say that you probably will find that with age, if you do mature and you do grow a little bit more and you do get a little bit stronger, that you'll be able to find that extra pace. So don't be rushing, thinking, I need to achieve this right now, and as a result, start suffering in terms of your control or the spin you can put on the ball. There will be ways you can add pace through, like I say, increasing momentum, but I would say that for now, don't be trying to get too far ahead of yourself, because we don't want other things to suffer. We don't want to spin the ball less, because one of the key things you can do is you can confuse people by spinning the ball in different directions, and the added pace that you can generate may find decreases the amount of spin. I know you're thinking about reducing decision-making time, which is a good plan, and that's a good way to be. But I would think think about playing the long game a little bit more, rather than looking for an immediate result and trying to just bowl the ball a bit quicker. Just allow yourself a little bit of time to mature in terms of strength and probably size as well, as your limbs can continue to grow. That's one thing that can add a little bit more pace for you. So just allow a little bit of time. Don't rush into it. Be interesting to see your action. If you don't have a lot of momentum into your action, that would be one thing you could consider if you did want to change anything. But I'd be patient. Keep working on the other key areas of it, which will help him reduce their decision-making time, which is making sure you stick to your good areas and maintain the control you want to do, and keep trying to spin the ball as much as you can, regardless of which direction it's going in, which by the sounds of the way you're bowling appears to be in a few different directions.
Yeah, it's spin bowling is not just about how fast the ball comes out. It's also about how much it's turning, what direction it's turning in, how much it's drifting, how much it's dipping. So there's a lot going on. We don't really know what Sam's doing with all of those aspects. I mean, he's focused on the one that he feels is his weakness. So it's difficult to provide a great deal of advice, isn't it, Gareth?
Well, it is, but going back to Sam's point, is that generally speed develops and speed of ball flight does develop as people get older. So if you've got those skills already, then that's fantastic news. The other way of increasing velocity into the ball is often to just increase the pace of your run-up slightly. I mean, I'm talking really slightly as a spinner, as opposed to charging in, to create a little bit of momentum, and then that takes a little bit of the pressure away from your bowling action and leaves your fingers to do the fantastic things in making a ball rotate that they are already doing by the sound of things, which is brilliant to hear. You know, to be able to bowl two types of carom ball is a special skill. So as Sam said, you know, don't negate that at any stage of your career. But you might want to experiment in nets just a couple of times to see if it fits with you, whether a little bit of pace, more pace into your approach might help to get the ball down the other end without negating from your skills.
Yeah, and it's definitely wrong to try and bowl too fast, because that's when the action can go a little bit crazy, doesn't it, if you just concentrate on hurling the ball down there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the great bowling coaches talk about the wrist and the fingers being the thing that revolves the ball, makes the ball spin, as opposed to the thing that propels the ball down the other end. And you often see a number of young spinners that end up trying to focus on getting the ball down the other end. And as a result, they end up pushing the ball with their fingers rather than using the skills which they've got when they're kids of getting the ball to rotate through the air and then hit the pitch and break off of the pitch. So, to me, it's a massive skill that you've got and a gift. Terry Jenny used to call the ability to spin a ball a gift, and I tend to agree with him, because there aren't many around that can do it in the ways that we'd like to see them do it. So keep working on that gift, but your pace will come as you get older. It generally does. You're not going to get slower until you get to probably my age. So just stick with it, trust yourself, and I'm sure that it'll come good for you and your pace will pick up. But those skills you've got are amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know many people who can bowl a carom ball. That's a heck of a skill, isn't it?
Well, it is, and especially if you can get it to go the other way, which it sounds like we have in this case. You know, stick with that completely. Really exciting. And if you do get the opportunity to get some front on footage of yourselves, I think both Sam and myself, and probably David, will be very keen to have a look at it. So even if it's on somebody's phone, get some footage, because it'd be fantastic to have a look at the different variations that you have.
Time now for the Soapbox 60 Seconds, where one of the team gets to rant and rave or just have a little chat for 1 minute without interruption. And this week, it's Lavers. Lavers, your time starts now.
Okay, well, I was just thinking about how people go about reviewing their performances, and I've spoken to a few people recently just about how their performances are going and their successes and failures. And it's interesting how people word their own personal reviews and assessments of how they've done. So often I'm hearing things like the bowler was doing this, or the pitch did that, or the umpire did something. And I try and try and just remind them, hold on, we're actually reviewing you. We're not reviewing people around you or the environment around you. So I always try and think, let's try and make sure our focus is on learning and improving. And the only way we can do that is if we put the focus of our review and our assessment on ourselves, so that as we voice our opinion about how things went, or as we analyze a situation, we try and make sure that the primary focus is ourselves. We can mention other areas around ourselves, whether it be the situation or the pitch, but try and retain your primary focus for your assessment as what you do and what you did.
And that is the end of the show for another week. We're coming up to closing everything down, but before we go, we need to decide on a winner of this week's competition. Two questions, one prize. Arjun had a question about judging runs, and Sam had a question about bowling pace when you're a mystery spinner. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Arjun this week. I don't think we get enough questions about what is an art, isn't it? It's a skill and an art that needs to be developed, which is running between the wickets. So Arjun, you're my winner.
Congratulations, Arjun. There's lots of stuff on the site for batting. I don't think we've got anything specifically on running between the wickets in our premium section. Maybe that's an area that we need to work on. Now, Gareth, if someone wanted to get in touch with the show and get their question answered and join Arjun on the list of prize winners on the honours board here that I've got in my studio, what would they need to do?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
Honours board's getting quite full. We've got nearly 300 names on it, so it's it's racking up. You can also get in touch with us via Twitter at PitchVisionAcad, or you can find us on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, you can post your question there if you prefer, or you just want to have a chat with us about anything you like, really. There's always plenty of conversation going on. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can do so by subscribing in iTunes. That's a simple matter of going into iTunes, searching for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll see a subscribe button, click it immediately, and you'll get the show every week without having to check back. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you want to do something else, you can do a search in most podcatching programs. They've got search tools now, which are pretty effective. But if you want to use the good old RSS feed, it's at pitchvision.com/academy, and then you click on the podcast link for all the details on that if you're a little bit more techie. And that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Lavers. Cheers, Gareth.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers, all.